You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 91, Bad Ideas.
Kind of going back to our talk on fingerprints, my idea and the reason why I keep using the word fingerprints is because somebody else out in the world is already using this to some degree, this concept. So cookies has been like the long-term tool for tracking your computer. Essentially, it's a, if you're, I'm sure everybody on this that listens to us is familiar, but on
the
risk
that you eat,
not
they're
sure.
Delicious. Chocolate chips are the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me more cookies because I'm the cookie monster. Your cookies are basically a little piece of script that is embedded into your, that your browser keeps track of, that lets you know where you are on, you know, that basically if you go to a website, the website can give a cookie, and it's basically like a little piece of information that has like your user ID, if you're logged in or not, stuff like that. And it's kind of how they keep track of login information. It's how they keep track of all sorts of stuff. It really was used to be, it's supposed to be used individually for that one website. But a couple of companies have come up with ideas of how to build these super cookies, Facebook being one of the prime offenders of this idea.
Yeah, DoubleClick is the other one, which is now owned by Google.
It's this idea of being able to build these cookies that will be an identifier of your browser and your computer to many, many websites, allowing them to track you across the internet. It gives them a lot more information about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and then the NSA is able to look at that as well because they have access to everything. Well, except the NSA doesn't really need to. They can, the whole Prism thing and they're tearing off the, that's besides the point. Google and Facebook are your big dudes right now that are doing that. One of the big movements in browser technology is to get away from the cookies. Like, what's it called? Firefox is constantly in debate about whether or not they want to make cookies default off.
And it's third party cookies.
Right.
First party, fine, no big deal. They understand there's a, you know, makes a ton of sense really well. But it's the third party ones like Facebook and DoubleClick where, you know, they're third party.
Right. And this would affect advertisers the most. So advertisers hate this idea. There's a sudden change of currents in the industry because they've basically decided that they're not really necessary. It is easier and actually more efficient to identify computers and users based on a unique set of features of your browser and your computer configuration. A little piece of JavaScript basically goes in a system dump of all the different features. They store all that information, and the next time you come back to the website or every time you go to some other website, they basically do the same diagnostic. Like, and they look at things like fonts and different operating system and different things that are working in the background of your system, and they basically take all that information, they create a unique fingerprint of your device, and every time you pick around to another site, they keep track of that fingerprint. And since it's a little piece of JavaScript that anybody can embed into their stuff, Google will assuredly put that into their data tracker, which anybody who is serious at all about their website embeds that little piece of code in their in their website, so they can go back and see who's going to the website and when they're going to it. Which, you know, full disclosure, furloughbros.com does that. Check it out; it's a great site. But it allows us to keep track of how many visitors we get, unique visitors, residence time and stuff. And now I'm sure it also gives Google all sorts of information about where your computer is. And don't blame us. Everybody on the internet does it. This has become the next big thing. And the other crazy part about it is they're like, a lot of people have been like, well, I'll just change my system configuration up. But like, the problem is that this is like 98% of computers are unique. And if they are able to like track over time how systems change. So to some degree, they know like what changes. And if they track a change, if they can tie an IP address, a computer together with a change, all that does is make your computer more identifiable over time. And it also starts to allow them to bridge identities of computers across different operating systems and different, especially different browsers and stuff, because they can start to put together what browsers are being used on what computers. And the other thing is that most mobile phones, specifically Apple, they reject most third-party cookies. They use a different system for really keeping track of all of that, which it's funny. I'm actually not that familiar with it. I'm believing the article on that. But
well, I know Apple rejects them for sure. So
right.
I'm surprised they use another system. Right. I'm sitting here, and I guess this is probably true because there's a ton of money on the table for it. But like I know the stuff that HP does in order to track users and you know of all sorts of products. Right. I mean, and that's a huge data problem. And so you start talking about how they can pool computers together. I don't know. I guess you get a super smart engineer who can create those algorithms to start to bundle them together. But that's just
it seems like a mess. It seems difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe someday in the future, but. Jeez, that's a lot of unstructured data that you're pulling together or trying to make sense out of. But I don't know, that's the hope and dream, I guess. But it just sounds very unrealistic. Maybe they are, but they're not looking at you or me. They don't care. If anything, they're looking at the data at a very, very, very high aggregated level. I'd be shocked if they're trying to pull together different users and figure out what's the
use. They might be looking at a very small subset of users as kind of a proof of concept of can we do this? How would we do this? Because for most people, most of the time, your cookies work. Whereas like mobile users, since your cookies don't work on your mobile devices, you know, it might be that they're just looking at mobile devices or looking for identifiers, which is the other big thing that this talked about is that this would
work. It's easy for me because I log into Facebook and Google everywhere. So
I know. There's no guessing game for me when it comes to those two companies. They know what I do.
All know that I got ad blocks. So yeah.
Yeah, that's right, Forbes. Forbes is
right.
Awful. I accidentally looked at Forbes without ad block on.
What's that like?
It's unbelievable, man.
I noticed there's a whole like blank section on this right hand side column.
Yeah.
My guess is that's not true.
Yeah, it's sort of like Matt Daily News as well.
Oh my gosh. This guy's
every once in a while it's funny. When I install AdBlock on other people's computers, it's because I jumped onto a Mac Daily News. Like I can put up with using Twitter and Facebook and Pandora and all these other services, Reddit without AdBlock on, but Mac Daily News is the one that it's unforgivable. It's unforgivable. That is the ugliest site, and it's funny, I forget how ugly it is because it looks really clean and nice without any ads.
Yeah. Well, and even their mobile one is just that one huge one at the top.
Oh yeah.
Just gotta scroll fast until before the image loads.
Right.
Yeah, that's they are pretty
funny. They're so funny though. I love their just ridiculous criticisms. The best part to me is when they have a title where they're like, "Why Facebook is dead and some other garbage." Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why Apple is supposedly doomed.
Yeah.
Comma supposedly.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I love that. Their titles, man. They're another one. Their titles are just fun to read because they're so biased. They don't even.
Yeah.
They don't even try. You know. I mean, that's where they try to be like, how biased can we be in this post?
Yeah, that's the best part. Is it's so absurd, so absurd.
I love it. And then it's fun when they get a non Apple person on the comments. Oh. Just
get ripped apart. Why are you even here? You're in the wrong part of town, dude.
It was fun. What was the one too? It was like Bill Gates retired. It was like his last day, and everyone was doing all these like mementos and you know, saying nice words about him and everything. And they were just like, "Bill Gates is a jerk. We hate him."
Right?
Like, would you expect something different?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's so funny. That was It's Mac Daily News. Come on now.
The end of the tyranny, finally.
Yeah, exactly.
May Balmer live forever.
The Balmer toast is great. May Balmer remain CEO for as long as it takes. Oh man.
They're good. Rumor mill is they might be going through some huge restructuring.
Who?
Yeah, that goes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully it's all right. I get almost all of my Apple news out of them too. I mean, they're just such a big net. They catch any board.
No excuses. You're an Apple fanboy. It's okay. Me too.
Well,
that's why I read it. It's entertaining.
Yeah, it is very entertaining. But
I like the ones where you can. I had already read the article somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then you see their interpretation of the article and the title. And you're just like, yes. So biased.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's awesome. So funny. Oh,
they hate Dvorak too, which I think he's.
Oh yeah.
But
dude, he's a little crazy. Dvorak.
But they hate him.
They look at every opportunity to tear him apart.
I love it. They just have certain people they hate. Him and who's the other guy? He's the analyst that they eviscerate every time. But I don't remember. But the guy hates Apple, so they hate him.
And right.
I don't even think he knows they exist, which is the funny
part. Yeah, that's the best part.
He's just
the little nipping dog at the ankle. What are you doing?
What? You're driving traffic my way? Or yeah. Even though they're like, be careful before you click.
Right, yeah, think before you click.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. They're so biased. Oh, it's funny.
Yeah.
I hope we're like that. Okay, you get one more.
One more. So, Project Loon, I'm reading more and more about it because I think it's amazing and I want to become part of their team, work for Google as part of the Loon team. But what's interesting is, you know, people are now starting to actually like think about what this is going to be like and how it's all going to work. And one of the problems is that this is like a giant geopolitical nightmare because there's a couple of different things that are going on. Number one, these things, because of how they work, the main satellites or the main, I call them satellites, they're not technically satellites, the main blimps are going to traverse the globe. They're not going to be geosync with whatever location they're over. So as the Earth turns below them, they're not necessarily going to keep up. They will to some degree just because of wind currents and stuff. But they're, you know, for the most part, they're going to move around the world. So a few weird things that go on is that, like, they're talking about the fact that it just so happens that Iran and Texas have the same latitude. So the same blimp over the course of, you know, over the course of the Earth's rotation will service Texas and Iran, which Texas and or Iran might not be totally cool with as travels over. So they got stuff like that they have to deal with and that's going on. They were talking about stuff of like the fact that, you know, bandwidth and spectrum is super highly regulated in most developed countries because there's frankly not enough. But one of the big issues that you come up with is like the bandwidth or the spectrum in the U.S. is different than this spectrum in the U.K., which is different than the spectrum in China, or how it's regulated. So they're talking about one of the big problems will be trying to build blimps that have these universal spectrum things. So as you move into as you move into different zones where you have to operate in different parts of the spectrum, either A, there's the licensing nightmare of trying to license it, or just being able to operate in different parts of the unlicensed spectrum. And some of it will be, you know, some of the spectrum is going to be highly, you know, functional in this part of the spectrum because it's better for what they're doing. And it's open, so that'll be great in some countries. But in other countries, it'll be this part of the spectrum that it'll be best for them to function will be closed or already purchased or whatever. So they're talking about just different things that are going on with this with Loon. There's also the issue of the fact that Google's essentially becoming a global ISP, which there aren't very many of those. They might number in the zeros. An internet service provider that functions effectively around the world, around the globe, has never really been done before on this kind of scale. And so that's its own, you know, nightmare of different things that are of different issues that they have to work around, and they're going to have to deal with.
So do you think they'll actually stand a chance beyond just pure research? I mean, you're listing off some very, very big hurdles.
So this article actually was really interesting because they were talking about how these are huge hurdles, but they did talk about the fact that there is precedence for a system sort of like this already working. You're like, okay, point it out. And they're like, well, just go a few more miles out into space and you have the network. Now, it's a little bit different because the satellite network is in clearly international space.
Right.
And it's a little more, you know, cowboys and Indians up in space, where it's, you know, we don't shoot down their satellites because they don't shoot down our satellites, and there's a bunch of space debris up there, so if you can survive, good luck. You know, it's just sort of, and there's a lot more space. So we do have a system by which this all works, and the reality it is that the satellite system is pumping spectrum into and out of the atmosphere all the time. They are operating in a spectrum that could interfere with ours. And so what they're basically saying is that yeah, as much of a nightmare as it is, we've already got a system for dealing with that, and that is in the satellites. The biggest difference is that the satellite spectrum came first. Really and truly, I mean, you got your earliest radio waves in the form of radio, but really about the time that TV was taken off, satellites are going into orbit. Your early Sputniks and GPS satellites are getting thrown up into the atmosphere, and then communication satellites came relatively soon after that. So it's, you know, there was a lot more spectrum, and they kind of got to cut out their territory early on. So it was a little less of a nightmare to deal with. But they're basically like, you know, different countries have figured out how to deal with this. The biggest problem, and the weirdest part about this is that a lot of most early satellites, and almost exclusively, were state actors. So it was different politicians and different diplomats dealing with other countries saying, hey, we're going to put a satellite up over your atmosphere. And the other country said, we don't like that. And we'd say, well, shoot it down then. And they go, we can't. And they go, that's my point. So, you know, it was a it's a little bit of a different situation in that there was – where they couldn't form cooperation, the other country couldn't do anything about it. But nowadays, you got, you know, there is a lot of cooperation in there. Whereas Google's a non-state actor; it's a
that's true, huh?
Or it's a non-governmental organization; it's an NGO, and which is not really what it's been in its entire history. And so this will be its first stage or its first real step into international politics as an NGO. And there's a lot of precedence for how different countries deal with different NGOs. And what they're doing isn't necessarily crazy or unique in that they want to bring telecommunications on the cheap to different countries. The weird part about it is that these things will pass all over the world. And so they're talking about the fact that that's one of the undercurrents of Project Loon that Google doesn't really talk about, but it's going to become a huge part of the whole project, is going to be their interactions with the UN and becoming a full-blown sanctioned NGO, you know, at least from, you know, as an American NGO, and really, you know, something that the UN deals with on a big level. Having to get into the whole mess. So, you know, the technological part, actually, they're talking about, that's the easy part. That's the fun part. You can do a bunch of research. You can figure out how you do it. The real trick is going to be, who are the politicians, who are the lobbyists that they hire to go in and sweet talk all the diplomats at the UN to allow them to do this. But
same people trying to let them drive cars without drivers.
Yeah, probably. It's a different game, though. And to me, To me, that's, I've always thought international politics are way more fun than domestic politics. Domestic politics are annoying, stupid, and petty. International politics are exciting, fun, and warty. so, you know, it's okay. To me, that makes me want to be part of the Project Loon team even more, because it's just that much more rough and tumble. 235 or 36 or whatever the number is, independent actors acting all within a fleet. What's the way of putting it that I've heard before? That's really cool. It's 235. Great. What's the word I'm looking for? When you're 235 sovereign individuals acting within a completely governmentless system, you know, total anarchy. That's essentially what you have in the country region. You know, there is no government over them, so there are no rules. And the only rules that are the rules that we agree to, and since we're the biggest dogs in the entire world, the only rules that we care about are the ones that help us. You know, why do we have a massive drone program all over the world where we take people out in countries that aren't ours? Because nobody else can yet. The moment anybody else does, we're going to be really in support of some hard regulation through the UN and treaties on what really and truly should we be allowing countries. And we're not pointing at any people. We're not naming any names. But should we allow countries to just fly into other countries and blow them up? And China's going to be like, dude, what have you been doing for the last 10 years, you jerks? Like, now that we're doing it, you're upset? What the heck? Interesting. It's interesting. It's really, I'm looking forward to watching this one over the next couple of years and seeing as they change the world.
They're going to try.
Yeah.
I know that about it. I'm on my landline. I don't have to spend on a balloon.
Yeah.
But those are some interesting problems. You know, it's one thing to tackle technical, it's another to, you got to tack on policy as well. But, you know, that's the point of some of the projects.
Right.
It's interesting. You know, you see a trend where it seems like every single project from Google X involves some sort of new legislation hurdle at the same time.
Right.
You know, it's privacy concerns, driving list car concerns, and now spectrum concerns. They're pushing the envelope.
That's right. Cool. Right. Yeah, it's cool. It's very cool. I like it a lot.
That is awesome. Well, dude, it is that time.
All right.
When you must start packing for the UK. No, you don't. You said you're leaving Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday morning.
And you're going to be in London itself?
I'm actually flying into Heathrow, but I'm going to be in Lincoln for the week, which is about four hours north of London. It's a uni town, and I will be there for the 4th of July. So I have this just absurd
intense
American flag shirt, button-up shirt that I bought.
Oh, gosh.
that I'm gonna wear on the 4th and go drinking at all the pubs. Should be done with my work by then, too, so if I show up over on Friday, no one will complain. I'm really, really, really excited.
So you're taking off Saturday. When are you expected to get back?
I fly...
Just so if everyone wants to rob you, they know their window.
Yes. Saturday morning I come back, and I fly out of Heathrow, and I'll be back by Saturday night here in San Francisco, probably.
So you're saying next Sunday's podcast is at risk, but the one after that, you're good to go.
Yes, yeah. I'm going to do my best to...
You'll be in town.
Yeah. Dude, you know what I do. I'll get one of those 16-ounce Red Bulls.
yeah. So we'll just have to... So next week's podcast timing might be... We'll have to figure that out.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's you or someone else or... Because I think it'd be cool if you can get an internet connection. That'd be cool to, you know. And I'm game with different times, so
yeah.
We'll coordinate. We'll do some international math to figure out time zones.
Nice, sounds fun.
Makes sense. Cool beans, man. Hey,
cool beans. Good show. You too.
Good talk all around. Everyone else, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My newly transplanted brother is Matthew Furlow. We'll talk next time. Thank you.